Welcome aboard the Story Ark. I'm your captain, Kenny Mears, and let's take a voyage together. Ancient Greek mythology is a staple of growing up. Many of us grew up reading the Percy Jacksons and the Olympians series, reading the stories of myths made relevant to today. And that's the fascinating thing about mythology, is that it is always relevant, especially when we pay attention to it. Today we have a classic Greek myth told by friend of the show, Stephanie Rollhazer. Here's Stephanie.
My name is Stephanie Rollhazer. I am a professional actress, writer, and storyteller, and as such, I have had the blessing of spending an enormous amount of my life immersed in the magic and the power of stories. And today, we can find stories anywhere in all different mediums, such as incredible works of art, major pieces of literature, poetry, music, and mythology. And we can use these art forms to help ground us, to help remind us of what we're here on this planet to do. And I think especially in today's day and age, with everything that we're experiencing from war and floods and drought and the judgment, competition, and anger that seems to separate and isolate us, if we can find the grounding that exists in these stories, the archetypes, the symbolism, the signs that go back centuries, and remind us of the love and compassion that we're here to share, that we're supposed to be elevating each other, I think that's paramount in today's day and age. And mythology is a place where I can find that solace. Myths aren't just stories. They are symbolic expressions that resonate within our conscious mind and speak directly to our human souls, providing a framework, if you will, for the understanding of the fundamental truths of our human existence. And myths are a picture language that not only communicate with our unconscious mind, but the archetypes, themes, signs, and symbols that are wrapped therein do speak to our souls, exposing deeper and more profound meanings of why we're here and what our mission is. And today, I want to start by sharing a story regarding ancient Greek mythology. And anybody who's ever spent any time on Greek mythology knows that those Greek gods were a hot mess. They were rife with the foibles and all of the idiosyncrasies that we as mankind carry as well. So let's travel back to ancient Greece 3,000 years ago, where in Athens, we have the Acropolis, and high on that Acropolis is the Parthenon and the temple to the goddess Athena. Now, Athena was the goddess of wisdom and war, which, what an oxymoron. We could spend so long talking about that alone. But she was in a strict competition with Poseidon, who was Zeus's brother, Zeus being the father of the gods. And part of the competition had to do with being the patron goddess or god of the city of Athens. Well, Athena had won that contest, and Poseidon carried around a grudge about it. He was a tad bit bitter and had vowed that he would seek his revenge. Now, in ancient Greece, we have a very patriarchal society. Men have most of the voice and the influence, and though women carry very important roles such as the mother or the wife or the house manager, they had very little voice or influence on society and what transpired. But in this booming metropolis was a young maiden, so beautiful, alabaster, soft skin, auburn tendrils that cascaded down past her shoulders, her eyes alive with vitality and intelligence and a charisma not to be equaled. And her parents saw her passion and devotion to the goddess of Athena. She studied under Athena every single day, worshiped the goddess, wanted to serve. And because of this, her parents went to the powers that be and asked for her to be placed as a servant in the temple. And she was awarded the role of basket carrier. And so every day she was able to serve in the temple of her favorite goddess and bear flowers and oils and gifts. And her intelligence and her charisma and excitement drew other patrons. And Athena took notice of this. Athena, typically a jealous goddess, actually became quite fond of this young maiden because her passion for spirit and her passion for Athena was contagious among the other patrons. And great debates would ensue and philosophical discussions, and people began to gather more and more often. And Athena was thrilled with the patronage. Her temple was teeming with people who wanted to learn more, be more, do more. And she began to brag to all of the other gods on Mount Olympus. Oh my goodness, her patron was the envy of all of the other servants in all of the other temples with the gods on Mount Olympus, specifically Poseidon. Oh yes, he took notice. He saw what was going on, and this competition that he had with Athena, it just became more and more urgent for him to surpass her in every way. And so he decided that he was going to take it on upon himself to recruit this beautiful, intelligent young maiden who had drawn so much attention to Athena's temple and take her to his own, increasing his own patronage. So every day he set about trying to woo her, trying to entice her, offering her great gifts and powers. And every day this young maiden said, absolutely not. She was devoted to her goddess, and her goddess continued to reward her with additional responsibilities, the planning, the staffing of the temple. She became someone who was very influential in the Greek culture. Well, this just incited Poseidon even more. And every time this young maiden turned him down, the angrier he got, until one day when she absolutely said no to him and said she would not speak to him any longer, his anger erupted. He grabbed Medusa by her shoulders and he shoved her down on the stairs of the temple. And right there, he defiled her. Medusa was distraught. Everything she had ever known, every safe place that she had ever been, every truth that she thought she understood in that moment had been destroyed. She waited for Athena to come to her rescue, to assist her, knowing that her goddess would be there for her. And of course, Athena was enraged. She was so angry that the temple shook, the marble floors, the columns quaked. And yet, her anger was not at her fellow god Poseidon. Her anger was at Medusa, for she felt certain that Medusa had done something to entice Poseidon, something to convince them that he would be able to take her away and bring her to his own temple. Medusa lay on the floor in tears, and as Athena raged, she came up with a punishment that she thought for sure would be so isolating and so painful that it would send a message to any other mortal, never to cross her again, never to defile one of her temples, never to desecrate her sacred area. Where Medusa's skin used to be beautifully soft and alabaster, she turned it into a hideous grayish green tint and covered it with scales that would never allow anything to penetrate it. The eyes, once alive with vitality and beauty and intelligence, were now pupilless fathoms, empty, and if any creature dare cross their paths, they would be turned to stone and hence into dust, a death that there was no returning from. The beautiful figure that once accentuated her body, she transformed into a serpent doomed to crawl the dirt and the earth for the rest of her days. And the gorgeous tendrils that cascaded over her shoulders became snakes, hissing constantly, incessantly in her ears so that no other sound would be able to penetrate. And as if this kind of transformation This isolation alone was not enough. She deposited Medusa on a desert island in the middle of nowhere that would be near impossible for anyone to be able to get to. And alone, isolated, lost, listening to the constant hissing of the serpents in her ears, Medusa slowly went mad. The transformation was complete. She had been turned into a monster, a gorgon. We see a victim turned into a victim all over again by someone that she felt was the person who was supposed to protect her, supposed to keep her safe in an environment that she felt was her home. This is a theme we see throughout society. But Medusa's story does not end there. You know, there's an old saying that the only way a leaf knows how to grow a tree is to turn towards the light. And in today's society, with all we have to deal with and as heavy as our problems seem, we need only turn towards the light. And mythology can lead us towards that light, towards those themes, towards those archetypes, because Medusa's story does have a happy ending. Now, there existed a young man named Perseus, half man, half god, son of Zeus. And the love of his life was about to be destroyed along with the city that she lived in. And once again, the god Poseidon plays a role. One of the goddesses had called on him to destroy not only the love of Perseus' life, but also the city that she lived in. That was the Kraken. And nothing could defeat the Kraken, the monster of the sea, except, as Perseus was told by the Sturgeon witches, the head of Medusa. Perseus was able to survive the journey to the deserted island where Medusa was. He was able to use his shield as a mirror of sorts to follow her in the reflection and was able to sever the head of Medusa and defeat the Kraken. But what happened when Medusa's head was severed? Something beautiful, something miraculous. From the pain and the suffering came the Pegasus. This incredible creature of divine nature. This stallion covered with a white coat so pure and a huge wingspan with downy white feathers. The Pegasus flew from this turmoil and this pain to represent the rebirth and the transformation that exists anytime we feel the heaviness of the darkness that is surrounding us. Yes, Pegasus. And it is said that wherever Pegasus' hoof hit the earth, springs sprung forth, providing new life, rebirth. So we only need to look to our ancient mythology to understand that even though today we are dealing with some very heavy, dark issues that weigh us down, transformation is available to us. Transformation is always there if we can be brave enough to walk through that darkness towards the light. We find rebirth, we find rejuvenation, we find hope, and we find light. And to me, that is why these great works of mythology, as well as art and poetry and philosophy, are something we need to be embracing today, because the magic helps us remember who we are, why we're here, and what our mission is, and that is to spread the love, the light, and the compassion to our fellow man.
The Story Arc is a production of Food for Thought Audio. This episode was written, produced, and edited by me, Kenny Mears. We'd like to thank today's storyteller, Stephanie Rollhazer, for sharing her story. Stephanie is a member of the Utah Storytelling Guild and a professional storyteller. You can find more information on her page with the Utah Storytelling Guild, as well as with the McCarty Talent Agency. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, YouTube, or Instagram, or wherever you listen to podcasts for more content. And until next time, thanks for listening.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.